Council, an old friend, Wes Jackson, who is the founder and president of the Land Institute, member of the World Future Council, recipient of the Bright Livelihood Award, and he's a MacArthur Fellow. And a jolly good fellow is he. He is a sidebuster who is trying to redeem agriculture. That's his plot. And he's a prolific author. Recent book is titled Consulting the Genius of Place, an Ecological Approach to a New Agriculture. Earlier book and with evocative titles that fit right in with our theme today, Becoming Native to This Place, and a very early book with an extremely poetic title, Altars of Unhewn Stone, Science and the Earth. Wes Jackson, champion of the prairie and an author of hope.
Destroys or threatens to destroy the possibility that future generations will know them. Coming across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco to Berkeley, after a frustrating meeting as a member of the board of directors, riding with Dan Luton, who also was frustrated back in 1984-85, frustrated that we couldn't get global warming to become an issue. And about halfway across, Dan said, "You know, Wes, the problem is, we came as a poor people to a seemingly empty land that was rich in resources. And we built our institutions for that perception of reality. Poor people, empty land, rich, our educational institutions, our political institutions, our social institutions, all predicated on poor people, empty land, rich. Well, now we've become rich people in an increasingly poor land that's filling up, and those institutions don't hold. We patch them up, we give them a link and a promise, but they don't hold." Wendell Berry said in The Unsettling of America that we came with vision, but not with sight. We came with visions of former places, but not the sight to see where we are. And as we came across the continent, cutting the forests and plowing the prairies, we've never known what we were doing, because we've never known what we were undoing. Wendell went on to say, when we got here, we found natives. And those natives became surplus people. And so we effectively institutionalized surplus peoplehood. And one of the ways we did it was to refer to the natives as redskins. And now we have more and more redskins, surplus people. The institutionalization of a manifest destiny. Well, it seems to me that this is a sort of thing that has to hang in our background. And now I'm supposed to have something so I can show some slides. I hope this is it. I don't expect much of technology, and it's not to expect much of me. Well, that didn't do it. It's on the podium. I'm up here, but please speak directly into the mic. That's what's on here. I got this little thing on. Now let's try this. Oh, there's that. Here we go. All right. That's interesting about this creature is that that's the main group of dinosaurs that gave rise to birds. That creature has a very high or very low brain to mass ratio. But it was doing all right until 65 million years ago. And I guess the geologists are pretty confident of this. But there was an asteroid that hit down in the Yucatan that at the point of impact was as tall as Mount Everest. And they had some reason to believe, based on the crystallization, it was coming in at 50,000 miles an hour. Now, that's moving. And they went, but thankfully there were some little creatures here and there that became sort of the forerunners of us. So thank God for the extinction of the dinosaurs. And thank God that there were some primordia to give rice to birds, because there ain't no fence that's gonna hold that guy. We would not have been allowed to stay here no matter what. So for those of you that are concerned about extinction, think about it again. Now, the problem is, it was an asteroid that did it, and we now have what I'm calling astroglebes as a consequence of agriculture that is doing the same thing as that single event. It's just that it's been sprinkled out over a 10,000 year period. So, I throw this in for no extra charge. The brain to biomass ratio and the mass to energy ratio is something to think about and is part of the problem of our times. The brain to mass and the brain to energy ratios are something that is a part of our modern problem. So, here is a derivative of that extinction. The Earth is not going to quit producing. The Earth is the only, the ecosphere is the only creating force at work in the world. It's just in time frames that we're not thinking about. So, there's plenty of food now. And now I'm going to show you something where we need to get a grip. This was in National Geographic a month or two ago. And there's the list of the food, a list of some of the food that comes into New York City and places from all around the world. But if you look at that list for a single grain, you won't find it. And therein lies a problem, because land use is the number two source of greenhouse gases. 70% of our calories come from grains, occupying about some 70% of our agricultural acreage. Now, some of that land use is due to deforestation, but if you take the deforestation that's due to the extension of agriculture, then that's about equal to all transportation. So it's important that power plants are number one, land use number two, number three is transportation. Why is it that we're paying attention to squiggly light bulbs and Priuses and that kind of thing? Well, because where those grains are coming is flyover country. And so, I love the local, organic, community-supported agriculture, all of that. But we've got to have those folk become the core of the constituency, plus all of you here, to do something about the problem of agriculture. And I can tell you how to do that. Here is the number two crop of the United States, soybean. And here is the top carbohydrate producer of the world, corn. And those are the kinds of grains that are coming to New York, either directly or in the livestock. They're also going to make biofuels in order for us to run up and down probably one of the worst technological systems ever invented, the interstate highway system, that has led to the demise of small towns, rural communities, and so on. Here is one of the consequences of corn. This is in Iowa. in the time of the year when the rains are coming. And another consequence of that are dead zones. Nancy Rabelais, who works on the boat in the Gulf of Mexico, where the major dead zone is, as big as the state of New Jersey. Nancy Rabelais tells me, oh Wes, there are 1,000 of them around the world. But what's in that upper, in that Mississippi River basin is nitrogen. And it's the nitrogen that is the result of what's the most important invention of the 20th century. When two Germans, who knows the answer out there?
Haber Bosch.
Who said that? I want to marry you. Well, if you get one person that knows that in a crowd this size, that's worthy of a long-term contract.
Human comes from Haber Bosch.
Haber Bosch.
70% of the nitrogen in humans comes from Haber Bosch.
Yeah. And Backlog Smill says that if it weren't for Haber Bosch, 40% of humanity wouldn't be here today. And the feedstock for this nitrogen fertilizer is natural gas. So let's get a grip on that. Haber Bosch was 1909. But World War I, then the Depression, then World War II, and then it's about 1948. 1948 is an important year. It's 2 years after the boys have come home, as the saying goes. But then you can see that it has doubled and doubled again, and it's also about the time that we see the pesticides getting their beginning. 1962 is Rachel Carson, so those lines are about the same. So all dependent upon the extractive economy for our food supply. And here are the ammonia tanks that are all over my part of the country in Kansas. So we have all of this, and we keep needing to think about, well, what are we going to do? If 40% of humanity is dependent upon natural gas and the Haber-Bosch process, what are we going to do? Well, one possibility is to turn to nature and think about a forest, or think about a prairie, or think about an alpine meadow. And what do we find when we look at those systems? Number one, they all run on contemporary sunlight. They all feature material recycling. They all are drawing on 20-some elements that are in the upper part of the periodic chart that you see in our chemistry classrooms. And so let's consider for a moment how efficient they can be. So here's a phrase that you may take away from you. We're interested in the efficiencies inherent within natural integrities. Say it after me. Efficiencies inherent within natural integrities. Again, efficiencies inherent within natural integrities. Now here's an example. The Haber-Bosch process happens at 400 degrees C. At 350 atmospheres of pressure. Take a cubic meter of atmosphere and compress it 350 times. And it requires a catalyst. Now, I'm going to take you on one of the most fascinating journeys on planet Earth, and it's microscopic. in the prairie, primarily associated with ladies, are some bacteria that are carryovers from that period when there was no free atmospheric oxygen on in the atmosphere. It's called anaerobic bacteria. But they figured out how to do it by building a little crust around the organism, a spore, so that when that spore finds a root of a legume to land on, the root will grow around that spore, and as it's growing around that spore, it is removing the shell, we'll call it, and as it's growing, there's 78% of the atmosphere is nitrogen, so we'll call that 78%. 21% oxygen. So as it's growing, it's using up the oxygen in the growth of the plant. So now we have within that little house 4/5 of one atmosphere. And using 21 enzymes, information rich, it does what Haber-Bosch does. Now, that is, we will say it together, an efficiency inherent within a natural integrity. That's just one. And there are countless of those examples that we find from natural ecosystems in what we might call nature's only true economies. There's nothing phony about those economies. They feed your material recycling, they run off contemporary sunlight. All right. So here is a prairie. And in the Flint Hills of Kansas, down around a place called Backfield Green, a town without a lifestyle. Others enough in Backfield Green. But here's what the ranchers do. This is what the Native Americans did. It's also what lightning did. And so we can imagine if we could build an agriculture based on the way the prairie works, that fire would be a management tool. Another management tool is grazing. And here are selective grazers. When the elk were there, they were grazing on a different focus of many things. Am I supposed to tell you?
Every inch of the way from Albany to Buffalo.
but they had coal. And that was a foreshadow of things to come. So, that's it.